What's inside your bottle of sunscreen? It is an hour on how to best protect skin here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Sunscreen labels, to me, are a kind of a alphabet soup. You've got UVA rays, UVB rays, SPF 30, 50, 70, higher maybe? The advocacy organization, the Environmental Working Group Sunscreen Report says most U.S. sunscreens prevent sunburn effectively when used correctly, but they aren't as good as European sunscreens at preventing the more subtle skin damage produced by UVA radiation. We'll dig into that with your questions along the way, 800-642-1234. Kelly Dobos is a cosmetic chemist who teaches at the University of Cincinnati and the University of Toledo. Kelly, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, and thank you for inviting me to talk about this important public health topic.
Yes, you've worked on the development of sunscreen. Can you explain how sunscreens work?
Sure. When it comes to sunscreens, and I think this is a good point too to dispel a couple of myths about sunscreens, we have two different types of chemistries we use, and those are typically referred to as chemical filters or physical filters, but that's not exactly correct on the science because they both absorb UVA and UVB radiation. But we typically call the zinc oxide and titanium dioxide filters mineral filters because these are particulate sunscreens. These are, you know, the ones we know are cause whitening on the skin. They're actually white pigments. And then the chemical filters, they actually absorb the radiation and dissipate it harmlessly as heat. The mineral filters do some reflection and scattering, but they also absorb too. So it's a little bit of a misconception that their efficacy is only in that reflection and scattering.
What is the difference between UVA rays and UVB rays?
So UVB rays are the rays that we know that cause the what we call an erythemal response, so sunburn on the skin that we can see. The UVA rays penetrate a little bit deeper, and they are more damaging to the skin, and they cause the more long-term effects like related to skin cancer or accelerated aging of the skin.
What effect do the different mediums of sunscreen have on protection, whether it's the lotion form or the more runny, liquidy type form or the spray-on or whether it's in a stick? Are there differences there?
Sure, absolutely. So the form that the sunscreen comes in really affects how it is laid down on the skin, the type of film you're forming. And that's a really important part of our product development process, is ensuring that those sunscreen actives get evenly distributed on your skin, because that's the way you're going to get the best level of protection. So those different types of sunscreen ingredients behave differently. So these soluble filters, like the organic or the chemical filters, will spread evenly on the skin if they're in a liquid form. And then the particulate filters, again, these are, particles in the sunscreen, need to be evenly distributed as well. So you have to formulate to put down that even layer on the skin. And when it comes to things like a lotion or cream, you want it to be able to spread evenly, but also feel nice. You don't want it to be oily or greasy, because that's one of the reasons people tend to not like using sunscreen. So we want them to use more of it, so we have to make it feel nice. And the sprays tend to be more, easy for people to use, portable, reapply on the beach, but you need to rub those in. So you can't just, spray and walk away. Those need to be evenly distributed as well. So there's pros and cons to the different types of products that are available.
I've always wondered, is the scent put into a sunscreen, or is it a byproduct of one of the chemicals in the sunscreen?
Many of the active ingredients themselves do have a particular odor to them, but we tend to also add fragrance to improve those odors, to make them more palatable. So a lot of times sunscreens will be you know, something like a coconut scent or something to make them more pleasurable to use.
Because they smell like summer or smell like the beach.
Absolutely. Fragrancing is a big part of what we do in developing products because it can have a big positive impact on what we call compliance or the usage of a product. And with sunscreen, again, we want people to, you know, be compliant, to reapply, to use it often.
To use that whole 1 ounce. I mean, that's a lot to glob on and really work in because you just want to get out there. And yet you've got to do this whole body conditioning of sunscreens. So I would imagine when you're, you know, creating and making sunscreens, you really have to think about kind of the push-pull there of the product.
Absolutely. And I think that's why it's important that we look at these sunscreens that are available in other countries, because some of those have those newer sunscreens may provide us with a better skin feel. They may be able to be used at lower levels and things that help us make better feeling sunscreens.
Talking about what goes into sunscreen with cosmetic chemist Kelly Dobos, fielding your questions about sunscreen, what is in it, how you use it, 800-642-1234. Kelly, you talked about mineral sunblocks, and, you know, they got that white and pasty look on the skin, but it's kind of blotchy, too, based on where you first put it on the skin, and then you got to even it out from there. Are there drawbacks or limitations to mineral sunblocks?
Yeah, sure. I think the mineral sunblocks, the biggest drawback is that they do produce that white color on the skin, and that tends to be a big negative for people, especially people with darker skin tones using them. And, you know, unfortunately, we can, you know, do a lot with the formulation to improve on that. And you can use a smaller particle size of those pigments, but there's a trade-off. The smaller in particle size you go, you lose some of the attenuation of the UV rays. So it's a real balance in coming up with a formula that is pleasing to the consumer.
Oxybenzone is a common chemical sunblock. Are there drawbacks to chemical sunblocks that you see?
Well, we've seen a lot of regulatory action around banning certain chemical sunscreens like oxybenzone or octinoxate in specifically states like Hawaii, because there are concerns about their effects on coral bleaching. But when a lot of these studies came out, what we see is they were focused only on those chemical sunscreens, right? So a lot of these mineral sunscreens were touted as reef safe, but that's not necessarily the case. There was just not enough research about the mineral sunscreens at that point. And we're seeing research on mineral sunscreens that show that they may have some negative effects as well. But I think overall, we need to focus on, you know, the public health issues around sunscreen and realize that kind of these issues around reef safety are maybe distracting from the real issues with coral bleaching, and, you know, that's ocean warming and acidification. So the real contribution of sunscreens there is probably quite minimal.
Kelly Dobos teaches cosmetic science at University of Cincinnati and the University of Toledo. Our guide to choosing sunscreen, understanding what's in the ingredients. Join in what you wonder about using sunscreen in the recommended way, what you've noticed about different formulas or applications. 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Kelly Dobos on The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. In the dog days of summer, we break down sunscreens and explore how they work to filter out harmful rays on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There's the broad spectrum sunscreen, mineral-based formulas that smell like summer, coral reef-friendly sunscreens. We were just talking about coral reefs. Food and Drug Administration currently allows 16 active ingredients in sunscreen. Join in on what you wonder is safe and effective. Sunscreen ingredients you're curious about, 800-642-1234. Kelly Dobos is a cosmetic chemist with expertise in skincare with us for about 10 more minutes. Kelly, you said that people in Europe may have access to different types of sunblock that may be advantageous. What do Europeans have that Americans don't have?
So when it comes to the list of available sunscreen active ingredients in the United States, you mentioned we only have 16 that we can currently use. Two of those are the inorganic, the particulate sunscreens, and the rest are those organic or chemical sunscreens. The European Union has about 27 sunscreens, total sunscreens. Two, they have the same two particulates, and then the remainder are those organics. Australia is another good example where you have the highest incident of skin cancer. They have about 28 available active ingredients, and it's because they're regulated differently in those countries than the United States. They have a different process for approving new sunscreen ingredients that is less challenging than our FDA regulations have allowed for.
What is good about chemicals used in, say, Europe or Australia that Americans don't have access to when you see just the vast difference in the number of active ingredients at the disposal abroad?
So when our sunscreens monograph through the FDA first, came about, this was the 1970s, and we were basically just learning about the impacts of UVA at the time. I think the first UVA filter wasn't really approved in the United States until the late 80s, going into the 90s. So what the European Union and other countries have are some of these more broad spectrum sunscreen actives that go into the UVA, whereas a lot of the US available sunscreens are focused mostly on UVB protection. And, we know now we need those greater levels of UVA, and they're also more photostable. The one active ingredient we do have with really good UVA in the chemical category is avobenzone, and it's not particularly photostable, which means it
degrades faster.
What do you mean by
photostable?
Sure, that it degrades faster when it is exposed to the UV light. Mm. So it breaks down while you're wearing it. There are methods to help stabilize that. We use other chemistries and things in the formula, but some of these newer sunscreen filters available to the European Union are themselves much more photostable, and we can use lower levels to make it something that also feels better on the skin.
The FDA, did announce a proposed order, I think it was last fall, to boost the protection offered by sunscreens here in the U.S. Has that made any effect?
The FDA has been looking at these new sunscreens for years now. As a matter of fact, some of these sunscreens, eight of these European available sunscreens, have been being looked at by the FDA, and they were put into a process called time and extent application, which was meant to accelerate their approval because we had a history of use in the European Union. However, one of those ingredients, Bimotrizinol, has been in that process for about 17 years.
So 17 years. Wow.
Correct. It is not the fast track that we expected it to be. Which is unfortunate, and it's preventing us from creating better sunscreens for the consumer.
How are new sunscreen ingredients tested here in the U.S.?
For the UVB protection, we use a in vitro method. So we're actually measuring that erythemal response to sunburn. For the UVA, there are methods here and in other countries where we use in vitro methods. So these are laboratory-based methods where we can measure different things like we call persistent pigment darkening or the critical wavelength to determine the UVA. So there's two types of tests we use to get at that UVA and UVB protection.
Talking about what goes into sunscreen and how it comes to market with cosmetic chemist Kelly Dobos joining in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Tom is here from Madison. Tom, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Good morning. A number of years ago, when I went to Montreal, I picked up some sunscreen called Ombrelle, which is French for umbrella. It's a patented photostable UVA, UVA, UVB protection with Parsol, Mextril, SX, and other sunscreen filters. I'm wondering if you knew anything about that. And I know there are other ingredients that we're actually supposed to avoid. And so, for example, I have a old Walgreens sunscreen lotion. And, you know, there's stuff you're not supposed to have in there anymore.
Tom, thank you. Let's hear from Kelly. Go ahead.
All right. So two parts to this question. So I'll start with the Meroxyl SX. And so when we talk about new sunscreen ingredients, you can go through a new drug application process, which is quite arduous in the United States to get a new ingredient listed. L'Oreal is the only company that has gone through that process, and that is the result of that process is the ingredient that in that sunscreen that he picked up. So they do have that available, but it's patented, so it is only available to L'Oreal to use. So it's not broadly available to everyone, but you know, kudos to them for taking on that process because it is very time consuming. It's like for any other drug that you would want to put on the market in the United States. And then when it comes to ingredients you probably don't want to use, we've seen PABA was removed from the listing for sunscreen ingredients in the United States as well as Europe, because it can cause skin irritation or allergies. So if you have old bottles of sunscreen, you know, you want to throw them out. You shouldn't keep them for any longer than 3 years, which is the expiration that the United States FDA wants you to target. You want to have a 3-year shelf life on any sunscreen produced in the United States.
And sunscreen, you can see that there is an expiration date on them.
Typically, there should be a sunscreen expiration printed on the label. It is not necessarily a requirement of the FDA, but most companies will print that on the label as well. But generally speaking, it's 2 to 3 years for any sunscreen. And you want to make sure you're storing it properly. So if you've left it out in your beach bag, you may also want to get rid of it because it's been sitting out in the hot sun.
What sunblocks do you recommend?
Oh, I tend to use the chemical filters myself. Anything with an avobenzone in it to get that broad spectrum UVA protection, because I prefer the clean look on the skin. The whitening formulas tend to, you know, rub off on maybe clothing or my car seats. So I like personally to use the chemical filters and nothing below an SPF 30.
We're short on time, and I just want to read this question from Larry in Plainfield, who says, their daughter gets sunburns under their eyes even when wearing sunscreen. What are the best products for young kids?
So there are sunscreens specifically formulated for children, tend to be the mineral filters, because they can have less of a chance of irritation or allergy compared to the chemical sunscreens. But honestly, you know, wearing hats, sunglasses, and sun protective clothing should be one of the primary ways to protect yourself from the sun. That and sun avoidance are always the top two methods. Sunscreen is, a secondary to sun avoidance.
I would imagine, too, you don't want to get that sunscreen too close to the eye because that could cause irritation as well.
Absolutely. You want to avoid getting too close to the eyes when applying sunscreen. So look for sunglasses that have good UV protection.
Well, Kelly, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I really appreciate the time to speak today on this topic.
Kelly Dobos is a cosmetic chemist who teaches at the University of Toledo. Ahead this hour, we'll continue our conversation about skincare with a dermatologist from Froedtert and the Medical College of Wisconsin, fielding your derm questions, your skincare questions, your sun questions, 800-642-1234. Don't go anywhere. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. In the height of summer, a dermatologist fields all your skin protection questions on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In past studies, scientists found we fail to apply sunscreen correctly. No matter the SPF, we apply less than what is needed, and we don't reapply it often enough. Ouch and guilty. I can't look at a shot glass without thinking of sunscreen, right? You know what they call the shot glass rule. Fill one full glass. That's 1 ounce, one application. Join in on your sun care tricks, moles, skin cancer, your morning skin routine, 800-642-1234. Dr. Olushola Akinchimoyen-Vaughn is a dermatologist at Froedtert Cancer Center and an assistant professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Vaughn, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, skin cancer has grown in recent decades. The American Academy of Dermatology saying melanoma rates doubled from 1982 to 2011. Why are you seeing an increase in skin cancer?
That's a good question. There's actually a lot of factors that are going into that. So the bottom line is that we have an aging population. And so all, you know, cancers, especially skin cancers in people who didn't historically wear sunscreen are going to be going up. So sunscreens really weren't developed until the 70s. And so I have a lot of patients who will come in and say, my goodness, when I was a kid, we went out there with like the reflective tinfoil and, you know, oiled ourselves in order to get that great tan, right? I know it's so painful because we just didn't know back then how dangerous those UV rays were. And so now, you know, we're kind of paying the piper for damage that was done decades ago. And then there's a couple of other things that are the reason why melanoma specifically is going up. There's an idea that we might have more UV exposure now than we've had before. So there's certainly more tanning beds and tanning bed use, which is a known carcinogen, extremely dangerous. No dermatologist would ever recommend that anybody use a tanning bed. There's also the idea that maybe people are having more sunny vacations now than they were in the past. And then from a scientific standpoint, the thought that we are detecting these melanomas more commonly and at earlier stages. So we're finding more thin melanomas than we were before. And so, there's kind of this perceived increase of melanoma, though it might just be that we're getting better. And then finally, there's this thing called diagnostic drift. So the people who look under the microscope at the melanomas to say, okay, is this a melanoma or not? Because of, fear of being sued, wanting to make sure we protect people and not saying, oh, this is a harmless spot, they'll kind of err on the side of calling something a melanoma more now maybe than they did in the past.
Oh, that's really interesting. How does melanoma, if it is left untreated, how does it become very difficult to treat?
The problem with melanoma is that the dangerous cells can be very insidious. So you can have, it's a kind of classic story that you can have a mole that was removed when you were 21, say, and, thought that it was harmless. And then decades later, find it metastasized to the lungs. It was actually a melanoma. Other cancers tend to not do that. They won't kind of sit quietly for years and years. So melanoma is really dangerous in that way. And then, you know, there's a lot of mutations that melanomas can have. So the treatments that we have, so say, for example, we have a BRAF inhibitor kind of chemotherapy drug. Well, not all melanomas have that BRAF mutation. So the targets that we have to treat are so broad, but we don't have medicines to treat each single target. So melanoma is difficult in that way.
Do we really need to wear sunscreen every day?
Yes, we do. That's a great question, Kate. I think
it wasn't a leading question, really.
I know. It's so easy for me to answer that one. I love it. That's the answer. Absolutely, yes. I think it's not realistic for most people to put sunscreen on everywhere. There's, you know, a friend asked me just yesterday, you know, should I be putting sunscreen on under my clothes? And it's like, you know, we understand that, you know, board certified dermatologists understand that people have to live their lives. But the fact of the matter is that the sun, you know, if you think of all the sun damage that you get as a bucket, dermatologists will use this analogy a lot. Most of the damage that you got, like half of that bucket is actually full by the that are out there slathering their kids with sunscreen. You are, even though they fight it and they hate it, you're doing the right thing. Keep at it. So that bucket is half full. And now every day that you're outside, you're just like putting a couple more drops into that bucket. And depending on how big of a bucket you have, eventually it's going to start overflowing. So if you are applying sunscreen every day, then you're just helping your future self to not have these incidents of most likely basal cell cancers down the line. But the other thing to know is that the use of sunscreen helps the most when it's every day. So they have done studies showing that daily use of sunscreen reduces UV exposure-related skin damage more than even using higher SPF, but only sometimes. So for me, I use my sunscreen on my face and the back of my hands every day. No matter if it's cloudy, it's the middle of winter, I just use it as like a moisturizer. And I put it on every day. It has SPF 30. On my kids, I don't do that because, I mean, they're not going to tolerate that before they walk to school in November. But when I know that they're going to be outside, I really lather them up with the sunscreen. And I do think it's important.
What level SPF should we be wearing? You just mentioned SPF 30.
Yes. So there's thinking now that SPF over 50, that you get to the point where it's such minor improvements that it doesn't really make a difference. And even that sunscreens shouldn't be allowed to be labeled that high. The myth, and I think sometimes a layperson doesn't understand about SPF, is that it's not multiplicative. So if someone has SPF 15 and another person has SPF 30, that 30 is not working twice as well as the 15. And, you know, it's kind of like the SPF 15 might protect you, you know, 90%, and the SPF 30 might protect you 96%. So it's improving, but it's not doubling. And then the other thing about sunscreen is that people also think that the math of sunscreen is such that, okay, if you would burn in 10 minutes without sunscreen, now if you have SPF 30, it'll take you 300 minutes to burn. And that's not actually true. What is true is that the amount of solar energy, like the amount of sun that you can absorb into the skin or that you can fight in the skin, lengthens. But that is not a constant. So if you are out in, you know, between 10 and 2, those rays are so much stronger that you're getting just like more rays of sun. And so that SPF time extension shortens. So, you know, SPF, I think that everybody should buy the one that they can afford that has the highest SPF. But after 50, I don't think it's worth the money.
Talking about skincare and cancer, skin cancer with Dr. Shola Vaughn, a dermatologist at Frederick Cancer Center. Join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Dr. Vaughn, Hannah from Madison called, couldn't stay with us. Hannah is an open water swimmer and wants to know what to be looking for in a waterproof sunscreen. Do you have any recommendations there?
Yeah, the thing that I think about water, you know, the idea of water, there's no such thing as waterproof, actually. It's all called water resistant because it will wear off more slowly but all sunscreens are going to wear off. There's nothing that you put on and then you don't have to do it again. Usually those water resistant formulations will wear off in about 40 to 80 minutes. And the bummer is that that can actually happen in sand too. So if even if you allow the sunscreen to dry on the skin, about half of the sunscreen's effect will be lost after contact with sand. So, you know, as you're in the water, that protection is certainly fading. And all that means is that you have to be more diligent about reapplying. Now for me and for my kids, what I much prefer is sun protective clothing. You know, like we all have sun shirts now. Mm-hmm. And I think if you know that you're gonna be doing a lot of water activities, then it's so much easier to just put on that shirt rather than, you know, try to find a water resistant sunscreen and have to reapply that, you know, so for, you know, we say every 2 hours for most people, but if you're in the water, you know, you're looking at every hour at least, that's just a lot to do. So I like shirts.
Can skin cancer be traced back to sunburns from childhood? Because, you know, as a parent, it can be really hard to get your child to put on that sunscreen, especially if they're off at summer camp and you're not there to remind them.
Totally. And yes, it certainly can. So, you know, when someone comes in to see us, our job is to triage people into a risk category. Because the United States Preventative Services Task Force doesn't actually recommend a yearly skin check for asymptomatic adults. So people, you know, normal person off the street doesn't have to have a skin cancer screening every year. But if they have certain risk factors, then they should at least have a risk stratification. So, you know, people who have a lot of moles, people who make unusual or atypical moles, people who maybe are redheads, people who have had a history of transplant. There's certain factors that might raise your risk, and you can talk to your primary care doctor about those. But if you are at higher risk, then you should have a triage. And when people come in, one of the things that we ask is, have you ever used a tanning bed? And have you ever had a blistering sunburn? Mm-hmm. So that blistering sunburn part is the part that parents can really affect. So we think of the blistering sunburns that you've had, like a single blistering sunburn can, I think the last thing I saw was double your risk of melanoma lifetime. So every time you have, and it can't just peel. A lot of people will have, you know, they'll kind of get too much sun and they'll kind of peel, but we're talking about blistering. Those peeling sunburns are also terrible, but you know, I want a blistering, you know, you saw little bubbles in the skin. Those are so bad for you, Kate. If your child has had that, then it's a sign that from then on out, you need to be, you know, insane about the sunscreen, hats, sunglasses, shirts, avoidance, because that really does raise the risk.
Milwaukee dermatologist Shola Vaughn with us fielding skincare questions. Still time to talk about skin cancer, about screenings, abnormal moles, sun damage. 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up in a minute with Dr. Vaughn here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our summer skincare conversation with Frederick Cancer Center dermatologist Shola Vaughn. Dr. Vaughn with us for about 10 more minutes. Let's go to Shane now in New Glarus. Shane, hi. What do you want to ask the doctor?
Hi. Great to talk to both of you. And I was just kind of curious. I'm all about protecting ourselves. I'm kind of old-fashioned. I was curious if there's any adverse potential reactions to the chemicals in the products that we apply to our skin to try to protect our skin.
Shane, thank you. Dr. Vaughn.
That's a great question. Thank you. The biggest adverse effect would be an allergic reaction to the sunscreen itself. So there's a condition called allergic contact dermatitis, or ACD. And sunscreens make up about 1% of all the allergic contact dermatitis reactions. And so there are some chemicals that tend to be more commonly implicated and some that are not. So oxybenzone tends to not be implicated. And that's one that we see very frequently in our sunscreens. Some of the ingredients that they have, you know, maybe more commonly in Europe, like octocrylene or, so, you know, kind of these ingredients that we don't see here as much, those tend to cause more allergic contact dermatitis. You will know if you have an allergy to a sunscreen about, you know, the first time that you are kind of sensitized, you might not notice anything. But then the next time that you put it on, about a couple of weeks after, you should notice kind of a mystery rash. And that would tell you that you're probably allergic to that sunscreen. So that means that you just have to find some different ingredients. Certainly the physical blockers, zinc oxide and titanium dioxide, are much less likely to cause an allergic reaction. So, you know, I do recommend those. I like the physical blockers the best. The other thing to know about sunscreens that we're putting on, there was this concern that some of those sunscreens might be having estrogenic effects. So, you know, kind of causing some hormonal changes or changing fertility. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was mostly debunked. Oxybenzone is the ingredient that people were really worried about. But, you know, when they were looking at that, they were doing these experiments on rats, and they were, you know, giving these rats like so much more than humans would ever be exposed to. And they still were kind of equivocal. So, you know, I would apply a chemical sunscreen to my children, my daughter, and I wouldn't be worried about the estrogen effects. So I think that's largely been debunked, but that's something I still hear people being worried about. And then, you know, when we think about, is the sunscreen killing the coral? That's the other big thing. So people who aren't just worried about the health effects on themselves, but about their environmental impact. I'm a believer in this, but the problem is that there's so many confounders. So, you know, we're seeing all these changes in the ocean, but we're putting a lot of other chemicals into the ocean. There's a lot of, you know, global warming. I mean, it's hard to know, is the sunscreen truly causing that bleaching? And I think we don't have all the data to say for sure one way or the other yet.
Shane, thank you. We also heard from Pat and Madison, called and couldn't stay with us. Pat has adopted children that are of Asian descent, and the kids insist they don't need sunscreen because of their skin tone. And Pat would like to hear your expert opinion on this matter.
Oh, what a great question. Thank you, Pat. This is near and dear to my heart because I'm a Black woman and my children, I'm mixed race. My children are mixed race and I slather them with sunscreen. So even if you have dark skin, so the average SPF that Black skin will give you is about 13. So, you know, you do have some additional protection, but I don't think anybody would go out with SPF 13 and feel like, you know, they're in great shape and well protected. So yes, Black people need sunscreen, people of color need sunscreen. And even more important, the reason why racial and ethnic minorities especially need to pay attention to this is because the melanomas and skin cancers that people of color get tend to be worse. Their outcomes are worse because a lot of reasons. They receive care later, they're discovered in later stages, they aren't utilizing the medical system as well. They maybe have lower socioeconomic status. There's a lot of other variables that are causing them to not, you know, get treatment or to have as good of care. Mm-hmm. And so if you are, you know, BIPOC A, you really do need to be paying attention and still wearing sunscreen. You need it.
Doug from Heartland called and thought, in northern climates, that we need vitamin D, which comes from the sun, and is wondering, is there a balance between sun protection and also the benefits from absorbing solar rays?
Yes, thank you, Doug. That's such a common question that I hear so many patients ask, and there's a lot of confusion. There was a time when research was really kind of showing that if you applied sunscreen in the correct, you know, one shot glass kind of model, if you applied enough sunscreen, that the amount of vitamin D synthesis in the skin was decreased. Lately, it does not look like that is holding out. It looks like that is debunked. So sunscreen that a normal person uses even daily does not compromise vitamin D synthesis, even when it's applied under optimal conditions. So even when you're doing it right, it doesn't decrease your ability to synthesize vitamin D. And I think the reason that that's happening is because that vitamin D synthesis like happens pretty quickly. And most people, if you don't have, you know, kidney disease or, you know, photosensitive kind of disorders, then your body is able to make vitamin D, you know, pretty quickly and kind of adapt. The studies that were done, the vitamin D studies originally, I think that they used different kinds of UV light and not really the sunlight that we actually would be exposed to in the environment. Okay. So that was the long answer. The short answer is no, vitamin D is not compromised.
Renee now in Waukesha. Renee, hi.
How are you?
Good. What would you like to bring up?
Well, a follow-up to the question about ingredients. What type of ingredients are we looking for good sun protection? And number two, I've read that the FDA is planning on eliminating all chemical ingredients for chemical sun protection and going only to physical sun protection ingredients such as zinc oxide and titanium dioxide. I'm wondering why they're doing that.
Thank you, Renee. Dr. Vaughn.
That's a good question. I have not heard that they were going to eliminate all chemical ingredients. I'd be surprised because there's a lot of companies that have invested a lot of money into that. So I haven't heard that. So I can't comment on that. I can comment on the ingredients that we're looking for. So you named them, and I think people are becoming more and more familiar with these, the physical blockers, titanium dioxide, zinc oxide. The reason that people historically don't like to use those is because they make you so white, and you know, it's like the David Hasselhoff nose. They make you kind of white, ghostly, and pasty. I don't care. Like I have brown skin. I go out there, I look pasty and ghosty, and I'm fine with that. But what now is on the market are tinted sunscreens, and so these are my new thing that I am recommending so much more. They are the physical blockers, but they have tint in them. And you can spend a lot of money on these or a little money, but the ones that spend a lot of money, they have these kind of this like reactive science to them where they will actually kind of change to match your skin tone, or you can buy some that are made for your skin tone. A special reason that I like the tinted sunscreens in people of color is because there's a lot of studies coming out now that show that people of color actually have more skin problems such as hyperpigmentation, this disorder called melasma, from visible light. So not just UV light, but visible light, and the tinted sunscreens can protect against some of that damage from visible light. So my new recommendation is tinted sunscreens. I don't look down on anybody that's using a chemical sunscreen. I say the best sunscreen is the one that you're using.
Dr. Vaughn, thank you for joining us.
Oh, this was so fun. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Olushoa Ashimoyen Vaughn, a dermatologist with Frieder Cancer Center and assistant professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin. For disclosure, Frieder and the Medical College of Wisconsin are business sponsors. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.